The other big thing that happened, you see this? I actually feel bad about this one. Apparently, Dasha Nekrasova, the co-host of Red Scare, has been dropped from her talent agency and also dropped from a forthcoming feature film, which she was supposed to appear in, because she brought me on her show. Is that not crazy? And that was, what, a month ago? So we did that show, I think, in the first week of October, about a month, month and a half ago. And I don't even think it made a huge splash. They put it behind a paywall on Patreon, and they talk about me every week or every other week. I was a frequent subject of discussion on the show. It's Anna Kachian and Dasha Nekrasova, and they're two, like, New York socialites, very popular in the Dime Square scene and in certain political circles. And they've been around, and they've interviewed a lot of controversial people. They interviewed Curtis Yarvin and Steve Saylor and Bronze Age Pervert and all these guys. And they had talked about having me on. They never wanted to do it. Finally, in the middle of the generational run, they said, well, everybody's doing it. I was on Bradley Martin, for peep's sake. I'm on Aiden Ross, Nico, Gavin McInnes. I'm on Alex Jones every week. Candace Owens. Like, I'm basically hitting the mainstream. Everybody's talking about me. My clips are everywhere. You know, they get millions of views now. The only reason I say that is, like, you can't say that they brought me on to platform me or, you know, like that was some sort of breakout appearance. I had broken out. I had broken out of containment. I had reached the normies. I had reached a level of fame where I was fairly mainstream. Now, whether you consider my views to be mainstream, I had become fairly popular at that point, not long ago, about a month ago, a few weeks even before that when we discussed it. They bring me on the show, and probably, in a way, I'm really platforming them. I think when I came on their show, they got a huge boost. And I'm not saying that to be patronizing. But you can't charge them, like with Tucker, of laundering my views to a larger audience or a mainstream audience. Again, not saying that to be a jerk. I really didn't expect something like this. I didn't think it was controversial. We do this show, and a lot of people who are in politics wanted to see it happen. Red Scare is sort of a fixture in a certain political scene in New York City. So it was sort of a novelty, sort of an amusement. I like them. I think they're funny. I think Anna's very funny. I don't know what she thinks of me. I think she's very funny, even though we sort of disagree. I think Dasha's great, too. I think they have a good show. I went on their show, and it was not controversial. We had I think it was actually a really good conversation. And we sat down for, I don't know, an hour, 2 hours, dropped it behind a paywall. It was a month ago. Nobody really thought much of it, I don't think. Some of the clips went viral, some of the photos when she dropped her elf bar, whatever. Dasha dropped her geek bar in front of me. You know, so there were some memes about it, and that was it. Here we are a month later. Here's the story. Dasha, she was on the Succession show. She's in a movie. She's got a talent agency. She gets nuked from orbit. She gets dropped by her agent, her talent agency, and she gets kicked out of the movie because she talked to me. Now, one, here's my first reaction. I was totally surprised because that is just so anachronistic, it seems to me. And it's really funny because I told somebody last night, a friend of mine, I said, it really feels like 2017. I said, ever since the Tucker Carlson appearance, the snapback has been crazy. Because I really marched through over the past 8 months relatively unobstructed. When I did the Dinesh D'Souza debate, when I went on Bradley Martin and the Hodge twins, and I did all these big collaborations, and I did them without really a lot of controversy, without even really a ton of attention, without a ton of pushback. And so quietly throughout the year, I have steadily become very popular, relatively mainstream. I've been platformed on some very big shows, Patrick Bet-David, a lot of this stuff. And after I went on Tucker, it was like a mousetrap got sprung. And all of a sudden, boom, it's like people are getting fired again. People that I took pictures with are getting fired, just like in the old days. People I sat down with are getting fired. Tucker Carlson has apparently lost a sponsor on his show. So I was genuinely surprised, and I feel bad because I don't think Dasha even agrees with me on everything, or maybe even a lot of things. I think we have significant disagreements. We come from very different worlds, but maybe I'm an object of amusement or curiosity, and the same is true in reverse. I think we did it just because it was funny. It was fun. We wanted to talk to each other. And because she talked to me, they dropped her from the talent agency. And why do you think that is? Well, there is clearly a coordinated counter-revolution underway. That's what is going on here. There is a revolution ongoing, which is what, if you watch the show, this is what I've been talking about. There is a silent revolution. You know, the revolution is not televised. It is quietly happening in the hearts and minds of the people across the country. And what is it concerning? It's concerning the influence of American Jews and how they use that influence to get us to support Israel. That's really the primary awakening. That is the subject of the revolution. People are sick of it. People are tired of being finger-wagged and told what to do by Ben Shapiro, who clearly has no loyalty to the United States. We don't want to go to war with Iran. We don't want to support Israel's campaign in Gaza. And we're tired of the gaslighting. We're tired of these shadowy political moves, the stuff with Larry Ellison, TikTok, CBS, Barry Weiss. It's insane. People like Randy Fine are odious and disgusting. Their rhetoric shocks our conscience. And maybe more than anything, people are sick of this feeling that it doesn't matter how unpopular all of this is, it is going to keep going no matter what. At the bottom, if you were to strip it down to the most fundamental level, the most simple version of the idea, I think it's even bigger than even Israel and the Jews. I think it is a deeply felt feeling that no matter how unpopular this arrangement or these policies or these people, this lobby, no matter how unpopular this predicament becomes, there's nothing that we can do to change it because the deck is stacked against us. They hold all the cards. It's this cancel culture bullshit. The idea that Kanye West, the biggest recording artist of the 21st century, the biggest streetwear designer of the 21st century, can be utterly destroyed in a matter of weeks because he said the wrong thing on Twitter. And we all know who was responsible. Jonathan Greenblatt said we had to shut him down. It was the ADL. Because he said Jews created cancel culture. So what happened? The Jews canceled them. Because they wield the influence in Hollywood, in the music industry, in the finance industry, in government. That is why there was a cascading series of consequences. He was dropped by his talent agency, which was run by Ari Emanuel. And then you had Jonathan Greenblatt at ADL get Gap and Adidas to drop him from their deals, from their streetwear deals. Then JP Morgan froze his bank account. You know, what else would you call that? He couldn't get a lawyer to claw the money back. They wouldn't let him perform at SoFi Stadium. Some of these music labels, they wouldn't license music to be sampled in his songs on Spotify and the DSPs. So it's this idea that they hold all the cards. And same thing with this war. Trump runs, in a way, promising to bring an end to the war in Gaza, and it never ends. We're actually bombing Iran. He's elected on America First. He suspends foreign aid for every country except Israel. Netanyahu is at the White House four times. And he wants us to fight Hezbollah and the Houthis and the Shiites in Iraq. And he wants us to enforce the deal in Gaza. and people speak up about it, and they're viciously attacked and lied about by liars. Mark Levin says you're a Nazi, you want to kill all the Jews. That's a dirty, disgusting lie. That is a malicious, willful, awful thing to say about somebody, and it's not even true. And they lie through their teeth. Josh Hammer, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, they're aggressive, they're dishonest, they're contemptuous. They have disdain for us. They're dripping with it. We can feel it. And they seem to have all the cards. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me it doesn't feel that way. And they know it. They brag about it. We saw that display last week when the Republican Jewish Coalition got together and Mark Levin said, we're taking names. We're going to see who disassociates from who and we'll make our decisions. This isn't going to fly. We're tired of having to answer to you people. That's what they say. So there's this feeling that these malicious liars who are deeply unpopular, who have contempt for us, they hold all the cards. It doesn't matter how much the people don't like this and don't like them, who they vote for, what they do. They go back in their huddle and they make the decisions for the country. You call it out, they lie about you further, and then they get together and decide how they're going to ruin your life and ruin your career. They gang up on you. They use their money, their position, their influence. They gang up on somebody and they make it hurt. Oh, you talk to Nick Fuentes? Well, it just so happens that so-and-so runs your talent agency. Now we're going to drop you. Oh, and so-and-so is producing the movie. So we're going to make some calls because you talked to the wrong person. Then you had today at the, I'm not making this up. You can call me a gifted rhetorician. This is a fact. Ronald Lauder, the billionaire heir to the Estee Lauder fortune, he is the chair of the World Jewish Congress. The World Jewish Congress. This is like how for decades, liberals insisted that it was racist to say colored people, but not to say people of color, right? Because if I talk about world Jewry, I'm a vile anti-Semite. But when a billionaire Jew speaks at the World Jewish Congress, well, that's just totally normal, guys. Presenting Ronald Lauder, president of the World Jewish Congress. Thank you, great to be here. That's fine. But if I say world Jewry, oy vey, that's not real. That's an anti-Semitic trope. That's what it's called. You have an organization. It's what it's called. If I call it organized Jewry, I'm an anti-Semite. But if you go to the Conference of Major American Jewish Organizations, what is that even? If I call it world Jewry, anti-Semite, that's a trope. You're a hateful person. You're a neo-Nazi. But then they go to the World Jewish Congress and they're all applauding. Thank you. Thank you. We're bringing together the 50th World Jewish Congress. How are we going to help our people in Israel? Like, what? So anyway, that's just for openers. Ronald Lauder is speaking at the World Jewish Congress and says, you can look up the clip. It's on Twitter. He says, we need to pass laws against anti-Semitism because people are saying that we control the government. Okay, so do we hear ourselves? Do we hear what we're saying here? So one of the richest billionaires in the world who is Jewish chairs the World Jewish Congress. He got up before an audience of all powerful Jews, billionaires from all different countries, and said, people are talking about world Jewry and how Jews control the government. We must pass laws to stop them from saying this. Okay, so are we hearing the same thing? Did you hear it that time? Like the gaslighting, this is what we're talking about. It's so overt, it's so brazen, it's so in your face. And to speak in these terms about Jewry, organized Jewry, global Jewry, they say is anti-Semitic. To say they run the media, they punish you by firing you in the media. Jews run Hollywood. Really? Well, that person that interviewed you just got dropped by her talent agency and she's out of the film industry forever. Like, what? They're saying we run the government. Call the congressmen and tell them to ban them from saying that. And then they say, why is Nick Fuentes popular? It's because disillusioned young men don't have jobs. It's because you're lying. You're lying. Like, I'm right and you're lying. That's why I'm more popular than even those people that are criticizing Israel. Because to say it's about Zionism or about a genocide is really just not even the whole picture here. So Dasha Nekrasova got fired by Hollywood for hosting an anti-Semitic person that says Jews run Hollywood. Insane. But we all know this is how it goes. We all know this is the way it works. And you have to consider the following. When Trump got elected, there was this feeling that cancel culture was over, right? Am I wrong in saying this? A year ago, I think you could even say it was the consensus that comedy had been legalized and cancel culture is over, and a spirit of liberalization, and by that I mean openness, had come to America, that we'd emerged on the other side of the woke cancel culture, political correctness, the peak of that, which might have been reached, let's say, arguably in 2022 or 2023. And this had a lot to do with Elon acquiring Twitter and other things. But what we have seen ever since then is that that was really just half the story. Cancel culture did not end. It ended about certain topics. You have license to be cruel to brown people. Am I wrong? That's what that meant. When people said cancel culture was over, it meant that you can say offensive things about black people again, about brown people, about Muslims. And our Republican Party and our Republican government and the conservative movement was willing to look the other way. They said, now we're willing to tolerate cruelty and abuse and stereotypes and jokes and offensive things and maybe, you know, a degree of identity politics from white people and against non-whites, the third world, Muslims, barbarians, even about women. J.D. Vance said that it's liberal cat ladies. It's white liberal cat ladies that he hates the most. They're the biggest problem. So they tolerated all this offensive stuff against every other group. But what was happening all the time is that, of course, the deal is that you could never criticize the Jews in Israel. So the left can hate on white people, the right can hate on non-white people, but nobody is allowed to say anything about Jews. Nobody is allowed to say anything about Israel. And isn't that fucked up? I don't care if you're from the right or left, or you're white or black. We can all agree that that is basically the arrangement. The left hates whites, and the right is very offensive towards non-whites. That's fair to say. I say nigger on the show. I know black people are offended by that, I'm sure. And black people on the left say very offensive things about whites. And we're fighting each other. The right is fighting the left. The left is fighting the right. The whites are asserting identity politics against the non-whites. The non-whites are asserting their grievance politics against the whites. And you know who sits outside all of it? It's this other group. And they will lean in on either side. Stephen Miller will lean in and attack white hippie boomers that suck and Hispanics. And you'll have Jews on the left that'll attack, you know, white people, and Jews on the right will attack black people. But the one group that is totally outside criticism, the one group that is totally outside accountability is Jews. If you talk about the way they're organized, the way they behave, you get fired. You lose your job. And by the way, this is what Ye was talking about a few years ago. He was talking about it this year. He said, if I make a song about killing black people, it goes triple platinum. If I make a song about being a gangbanger and killing black people, other black people, and abortion and violence, then I'm a triple platinum recording artist. I'm honored at the Grammys. I'm honored at the White House. I'm honored by Rolling Stone magazine and the New York Times. If I make a song called Heil Hitler, well, the rest is history. Isn't that interesting? And it goes the same way in the right wing. Let me ask you this. If I went live on my show on Monday, this coming Monday, and I said, fuck Islam. I said, these Muslims need to go home. Fuck them. They're barbarians. They're third worldists. They like to live in open sewage and bomb crap. You think any conservative would disavow me? Any of them? Any Republican? You think if I was known for saying that, do you think I would have any trouble getting into CPAC or the New York Young Republican Club gala or the GOP? Of course not, because Laura Loomer has access to the White House and she says stuff like that. Ben Shapiro has access to Trump and he says stuff like that. Could you imagine? Not to be a boomer here, but could you imagine if the shoe were on the other foot? It has to be left unsaid. Could I turn around and say F Judaism and those Jews and send them back to Israel? Like, it's literally unthinkable to even say the words. But we all know it's tolerated with Muslims. We all know it's tolerated with blacks. We all know it's tolerated with Hispanics, Asians. And yes, for far too long, it was tolerated against whites and Christians. And that's just the part that got left out. But now that we have this culture of liberalization and political correctness is dead and racial humor is back, everybody's engaging in it. But if you say anything about them, it's a big problem. Even if it's as we talked about with this idea of a global Jewry, oh, now it's anti-Semitic. Now people are going to lose their jobs again. Here's the point. Cancel culture never ended. Cancel culture was always about this. And I think people even underestimated that. You know, there were people last week that were saying, I'm being astroturfed. Remember this? They said, I'm being promoted. The New York Times can't stop talking about me. Where are those people now? Dasha lost her job because she talked to me. Tucker lost a sponsor because he talked about me. The New York Times just did a big 2-hour podcast with Ezra Klein. They don't invite me on to speak for myself. They invite some Jewish liberal from New York to tell my story. And the whole interview is about how I'm a neo-Nazi. And really? So, this is a terrible situation. And it's like I said, at the bottom of it all is this idea of resignation and hopelessness, which is that you can't fight back. You take a picture with the wrong person. You're in a group chat. You like the wrong person's show. You have a conversation with the wrong person. You get fired. You know, the Jews that have all the cards fire you from your movie. The Jews that have all the cards kick you out of your deal. They destroy the Heritage Foundation. They kick you out of Harvard or whatever. And the real reason, and maybe this is answering, this is begging and then answering the question. You want to know the real reason people follow me? Because I represent hope. Seriously. It sounds corny, but I am somebody that goes in hard. I have no pretense. There's no mask here. There's no quiet parts. I'm saying it loudly. I'm saying it directly. I'm saying it explicitly. And I've done it in spite of all the cancel culture. I weathered it. And that's why people respect me. That gives me credibility because people see the bullshit that I went through. They saw that I was lied about. They saw that I was unfairly canceled. They saw how I was treated in such a hypocritical way. They see how I'm treated with disdain and contempt. I'm unpersoned. I'm treated like I'm not a human being. They see how much I've sacrificed, my personal life, my professional career, money, access to essential banking services. They see that and they see that I'm still going. They see that I'm still pushing the message. I actually have skin in the game to say these things, the things that happen to be the truth. It's the truth. And it's the truth about power. That's the most important truth maybe a person can say in politics. People will tell the truth about there's only two genders, but guess what? Transgenders don't run the fucking banks. And people can tell the truth that, you know, blacks commit all the crime. Well, blacks don't run the government, okay? And people could tell the truth about women or Hispanics or whatever, the Masons. Okay, but all those people, they don't run Hollywood. They don't run the media. They don't run the Trump administration and the GOP and all the rest of it. The Jews do. And that's why telling the truth about the Jews is a very complicated thing. It's filled with complications. And so people are rallying around me. All these people want to psychoanalyze. It's because the kids don't have jobs. It's because the kids are disillusioned. It's because they're looking for family and tradition. It's because I'm telling the truth. And I'm the only one doing it. And I have the balls to do it. And I'm the only one that's done it in the face of everything, sacrificed almost everything, almost my life. People recognize I'm in a certain amount of danger for hosting a talk show and saying these things. And as people are starting to get fed up with this situation, well, surprise, surprise, they're rallying around the only person telling the truth about it. We don't want to be bullied and governed and controlled by this hostile foreign lobby anymore. It's that simple. We're tired of being lied to and insulted and humiliated, being told about Judeo-Christians, about Israel's our closest ally, about the Holocaust and Hitler and anti-Semitism. No one gives a fuck about any of it anymore. We all have trauma. We all have our historical grievances. Everybody's racist against everybody else. It's a multiracial society. You think Jews are the only one dealing with prejudice? You think Jews are the only one that went through a genocide? And as for the allies, the country is broke. The country's broke, and they expect us to fight their wars? People are done with this. They're done with the hypocrisy, the double standards, the ethnic narcissism, the way that powerful Jews in New York and LA, the cultural capitals, financial capitals, intellectual capitals, we're tired of them thinking that the universe revolves around their parochial concerns. And this narcissistic self-obsession, it's like a form of solipsism. Their trauma, their community, their jokes, their Yiddish vernacular. We're sick of it. We're sick of the double standards. We're just done with that stuff. And there's basically just one person taking all the hits to say it. And everybody that's talking about anything else is really falling by the wayside. People don't want to hear about some like generic appeal to the nuclear family or faith or being vaguely conservative or what, non-interventionist or libertarian. Fuck all that. We want our freedom. We want our independence. We don't want to feel like we're being ruled by an ethnic gang. It's that simple. It's that simple. People are tired of being insulted and humiliated and ruled by a rival group, by some self-obsessed ethnic group. And it would be the same if it was any other group, but it happens to be this one. It's no different than any other hostile occupation. If the Chinese invaded America and they were running Hollywood, oh, someone spoke out against the Chinese, you're fired. Anyone that talked to that person is fired. People would say, you know what? Fuck this. Should it be like that? Should we live in an Orwellian state of fear? I can't talk to a person because they criticize Jews. Literally, I can't talk to that person. I can't be photographed with that person. If I talk to that person, I have to get my notes and provide ample feedback, ample pushback. But you didn't tell him that he's a bad person. Oh, where do you even? It's just, it's disgusting. This whole situation that we find ourselves in, it is so contemptible. It is so offensive. It is so unjust. This is not just. This is not right. This is not proper. You know, we can twist ourselves into a pretzel explaining the minutiae and the complexities and how convoluted it is. But suffice to say, it's bullshit. We are fucking fed up with it. We do not want to be bullied by Jews anymore. It's that simple. And that's literally like the contention of my show, because that's what happened to me. And I happen to be a very conservative 18-year-old college student. But, you know, you could be any other kind of a guy. You could be an 18-year-old liberal brown Muslim that wanted to criticize Israel from the other side. You could be some other person in some other industry that liked this show and talked about it too openly, and now you're getting fucked with at your job. This is where I engaged with it. As an 18-year-old young Republican, I said, gee, boy, I want to put America first. And there was the lobby with their hand up saying, not so fast. That's anti-Semitic. And now you're fired and you're a terrible person. We're going to destroy your reputation and spread rumors about you. And people are like, you know what? Fuck you. Like deep. And Tucker is out there saying, like, we can't become like them. And it's like, we have to fight this. Not violently, not in a cruel way, not in a hateful way, but let's just get comfortable with this terminology. This is not just. We want justice. We want righteousness. We want the truth. We want the cross. We want Jesus Christ to prevail. Not this like kill everybody to make Israel stronger. No. So insofar as I represent resistance, rebellion, revolution, independence, the truth, it actually doesn't matter the rest of the things that I am, which people might say, you're weird, you're a freak. That's what they say. Well, then get some normal guy to fucking do what I'm doing then. Get some fucking normal Bob. Get some, you know, normal Bob buff pants out here. But I'm the one taking the hits. So anyway, not to ramble too much, but the thing with Dasha is just totally outrageous. It makes me mad. It makes me mad because if you want to mess with me, they've been messing with me for 10 years. I'm used to it. And I'm not trying to white knight, but that's what really, now you're making them pay. You're making Tucker pay because he talked to me. You're making her pay because she talked to me. First of all, they didn't do anything wrong. Second of all, so the law is I can't have friends? I'm a human being with the wrong opinions. Now I can't talk to people. I can't have money. They want me dead. They think I'm not a human being. To them, I'm a Palestinian. To them, I'm a Gazan. And so is Dasha and Tucker too. And anyone, I guess, that talks to me. So on some level, there is a dramatic confrontation here, which is to tell the truth on this, you actually have to sacrifice something. And this is the test. I've known a lot of people and many people have suffered for my sake because they're talking to me or about me or they support me. And that's always the test. It's easy to tell the truth or do what you think is right or harmless when it costs you nothing. Doesn't really mean anything. But if it actually costs you something that you care about to tell the truth, that's the real test. How much do you care about telling the truth? And I've done this. There's a monologue I did some time ago, but I really believe that there is this overlap and this there is a way in which these two things come together. I'm trying to look for the right word. There's like a synchronicity here, which is politics is mostly crap. It's people just talking about nonsense. It's Brian Hollihan saying, we need to get more comfortable talking about politics. And it's like, what are you even saying? Like, you're not even saying anything. It's like, if you talk about these, like this biblical people, they will hurt your life. They will use your sins against you. They will try to take your life and take things from you. And it really is like there is something like theological about the political struggle that we're in. Because this is the only struggle that's like this. If you talk about the Masons and Monsanto and the Trilateral Commission and the Illuminati, this doesn't happen. But if you talk about the Jews, you're going to have to sacrifice something. Like you're going to have to sacrifice to tell the truth. And all your sins will be turned against you. All your weaknesses, your loved ones will be turned against you. And so you really are like going through, it's almost like a spiritual transformation. And I'm not trying to create some like religion out of attacking Jews. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, let's tell the truth. This is not a Christian country if it's run by people that are not Christian. Lying gangsters that do this, they're ruthless. They want to mow through the nations, they call them, the Goyim. They're obstacles and they're Amalek. They're in the way of Israel, of this nation, of this project. And it's like, if you speak out against this evil in the world, there's something theological that happens. It's a little bit disturbing and fascinating. So anyway, those are just some thoughts on that. But it's frustrating. Do we live in America? How Orwellian is that? How totalitarian is that? You had a conversation with this guy in 2025. Now you're out of the movie. Your talent agent dropped you. World Jewish Congress. We're going to ban anti-Semitism. They're trying to buy Twitter. They bought TikTok. They bought CBS. They're trying to buy Twitter. What? And I told you it would be like this. I told you the censorship would come back. I told you this is the eighth front in their war. In part, the Gaza ceasefire is so they could focus on this front. How twisted and evil is this? People were talking too much about Israel, so they bought TikTok. They want to buy Twitter to stop people from talking, to ban me, to ban Tucker, to ban Candace. They bought CBS so that when they write their little news reports about Israel, they're going to make sure to always harken back to October 7th. The way they've come out in such a coordinated way, pushing, they're passing around my show from 2015. Look at him in high school. He said he didn't like Trump when he was a junior in high school. Look at this thing with Ali Alexander that's been debunked. Look at the Capitol, January 6th. Look at what he said to vote for a Democrat. Accuse. They're modern Pharisees. The way they have come out in such a coordinated way, like fucking locusts. And you see it, accounts with 5,000 followers. It's like they all came out of the same group chat with their messages to the Groypers, with their condemnations, their disavowals, your noxious, reprehensible rhetoric, their think pieces, the redredging all the scandals, every unfortunate word I've ever spoken, deed I've ever done to crush the truth. And on some level, what we have to do is very simple. We are not called actually to even win or succeed. What God tells us to do is tell the truth. Tell the truth one day at a time. And whatever happens, happens. If you're persecuted for the sake of the truth, which is synonymous with Jesus, then that's a very good thing. Jesus says, don't be concerned about that because I was persecuted also. So the outcome belongs to God, actually. Whether we live or die, whether we win or lose, now or later, it doesn't matter. The commandment is simple. Tell the truth. Do the right thing. The time is always right to do the right thing, whatever the cost. You might get fired. You might lose your job. As long as you're motivated by the right reasons, which is a love of the truth, that's what God is. We're supposed to love our neighbors, but we're also called to love the truth. As long as we're doing that, the rest is taken care of. And that's always how I've operated. When I started, in the best of times, the worst of times, now, then, in the future, tell the truth. And they will attack you, they'll persecute you, humiliate you, they will lie, rumors, gossip, they might even literally crucify you, or figuratively crucify you. But that's what we're called to do, is to tell the truth to the pain of death. You hope it doesn't come to that, but that's the whole point. And if they're willing to do anything, they're ruthless, they're unscrupulous, they're bloodthirsty to accomplish their goals, we have to be willing to die for our goals. And ideally, we're not going to die. We're going to fucking win. But all we have to worry about is doing the right thing, and then we can call upon God as our ally. Do the right thing, pray to God, be guided by God in God's love, and love even those that persecute us. But emancipate yourself to God, consecrate yourself to God, and we don't have to worry about the outcome. You know, they might have all the cards. We have the only card that matters. God is on our side. The truth is on our side. In this life, in the next life, this generation or 50 generations from now, we actually have the victory. So that's what counts. And I really believe that.